LMC. You're listening to the LMC Radio Network, broadcasting out of Forestville, California, on the World Wide Web at LuckyMojo.com.
All right, everyone, here we go. Let's build that energy. Reverend James, hit the music.
Welcome to Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places, exploring the magical world around us only on the LMC Radio Network. There are so many fantastic, exciting, and curious things that make up this world we share. Come join us as we explore the spiritual, magical, and wondrous phenomena that enrich our souls and bring color to our days. I am your announcer, Reverend James of FolkConjure.com, located in Western North Carolina. This week, we welcome our special guest, Deborah Voith of BewitchingBee.com and Elvira Love of Elvira.com. That's Elvira with a V-Y. Bringing us today's topic, Mebun and the Turning of the Wheel of the Year. In just a moment, we'll be joined by our host, Reverend Art of FolkConjure.com in North Carolina, and our guests, Elvira Love and Deborah Voith. Make sure you're logged in to the Blog Talk Radio and join in the discussion via the chat. Now let's catch up with our host. Reverend Art, take it away.
Thank you, Reverend James, and welcome everyone yet again to your Monday evening indulgence of Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places. That's right, it is Monday yet again. It comes back every week. That also means Magic Mondays on Hoodoo Psychics. Take a moment, go on over to the Hoodoo Psychics Facebook page. Find the Magic Mondays post, drop a comment, and get entered for a chance to win your chance for a free 15-minute reading with the Hoodoo Psychic of your choice. A lot of great readers out there. A lot of great information to be had. Don't miss out. All right. So Monday announcements out of the way. Monday grumbles pretty much almost over since, you know, we're at the end of the home stretch for the day. How are things going with you, Reverend James?
Things are going well. I'm juggling lots of candles from our candle ministry, folkfaithministries.com, and trying to make sure that everything goes according to plan and doesn't go up in flame, except what's supposed to.
Yeah, it's a balancing act once in a while, isn't it? But like Reverend James said, so many candles coming through the pipeline in recent weeks. It's Honestly, I've had to turn the air conditioner on a few times. It's a little warm. anyway, I am so excited for the show this evening. It is a convergence of the LMC Radio Network shows tonight. We are joined by the hosts of the new Witch, Priestess, and Cauldron show, Miss Elvira Love and Miss Deborah Voith. So happy to have you both join us. Deb has been a guest on the show before. Miss Elvira is her first time joining us for a better duo to spend the evening with. So, you know, let's reach out and find out how things are going. What's new with you, Deb?
Oh boy.
It's been a while since we had you on.
I am so lucky. Yeah, I have a very full life and just a lot of things, a lot of interesting things coming up lately. We just did Pagan Pride Fest last week.
Nice.
And that went really well. And now the festival committee is going to be totally focused on the Milwaukee Witches Ball coming up at the end of October. And our theme this year for the Milwaukee Witches Ball is Enchanted Forest. And so I'm looking, starting to look for costuming items to transform myself into my best fairy witch. And I've been having fun stalking the Spirit Halloween stores and the thrift shops. And this is also the season. I have a lot of love for Ouija boards, and I've collected many in the past. But there's still a couple of prized antique boards that I would love to get my hands at, but the prices on eBay have gotten so crazy. I mean, I've always wanted to get that one from the 1890s, the Kennard spirit board. And that one is like listing like for 500 flat. The other one I've been real interested in is the pink Ouija board, which is also crazily listed for 500. And it's just like, no, I'm not paying that much. I know I used to be able to go on there and make bids for, you know, more reasonable amounts. But, yeah, so I just look at them and yearn. yeah. And then I'm excited to be working at I've always worked, like, at the local shop here at Altered State of Mind. And it usually was on Tuesdays, but since I started doing the Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, I haven't been working there on Tuesdays. And so tomorrow I'm gonna be working there with my sister and getting to connect with people in person and connecting with another reader who works there on Tuesdays that I really enjoy. Her name's Jamie Lee. And so I'm really looking forward to going to Altered State of Mind tomorrow. And then there's also like a student from Marquette University. She's the Assistant Arts and Entertainment Editor over there. And she's coming to interview me tomorrow to talk about palmistry and divination. Yeah. So that should be fun.
Well, you'll definitely, once that interview gets published, you'll definitely have to let us know so we can share it out with everyone. You know, and I know what you mean about the Ouija boards. James and I, we were out gallivanting, I guess you could say, for our anniversary a few weeks ago, and we found this new antique store that we'd never been in before, and they had a couple that we don't have in our collection. But I had a little bit of sticker shock, and begrudgingly, I almost actually went back in after leaving. I had to walk away, but the proprietors know that I'm interested, but I think I might have a bargaining piece or two next time we stop by. So fingers crossed they're still there, but it's wonderful to have you back.
Yeah, let me know if you get
I'll share some pictures with you and everybody. Cool. I'll post pictures. But
that would be great.
joining us for the first time, Miss Elvira Love. How are things going with you? Let's let our listeners get to know you a little bit. We finally had a chance to connect earlier this year, talk a little bit about joining up and coming on the show. So excited to finally have you here. So let's get to know Miss Elvira. What's going on in your neck of the woods?
My neck of the woods, we're cooling down, which is really a joy in terms of temperatures. My experience more intimately with the environment, since I have moved here 2 years ago, I was in California, and, you know, we obviously had our weather, and we had our fires, and we had all of those things. But getting here was a whole new experience with, you know, the idea of humidity and heat and then snow and ice and, you know, the rain stuff kind of coordinates with California. We just, you know, we get our flooding and all that. But my car had decided that last year at the end of summer it would die in terms of air conditioning. So I kind of went, oh, God, really? And so I proceeded to say, well, come spring, I will start working on getting it, which has taken all summer. And it's a 27-year-old car. I am the original owner. It's a Geo Prism. It has problems with parts, and the particular parts that finally were what we thought was the problem aren't being made anymore. So, you know, salvage yards from here to Canada were combed, and eventually my wonderful mechanic came up with a fix, which humorously got done about the same time I decided I was going to buy a new car, but a new used car. So that all culminated on Sunday. I got a Pontiac Vibe, which is kind of funny because it's a Toyota Corolla, and the Geo Prism is a Toyota Corolla. So there's some humor in all of this because as soon as that happened, my mechanic said, I figured out where the problem is. And so this week we are bringing my Geo back in to get fixed permanently because we found the problem. And so that's been my real world experience. The other has been getting the Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron back up and running. And, you know,
that's right. You were one of the original hosts.
Yes, yes. Miss Phoenix and I, of course, were the ones that started it. And when COVID happened and my move happened, everything kind of stopped. And then people's lives that sort of took on their own thing, their own direction. So Miss Kat suggested Deb, and we connected. And after that, it, you know, is now history because we spent several months talking and getting to know each other and, you know, deciding, you know, where we were, what our philosophies were about things, and creating the new and improved Witch, Priestess, and Cauldron. And as we have always said, we had a tech person with the Cauldron. And since neither one of us are really great tech people, I needed a Cauldron person. So Nagashiva graciously offered to be that tech person and Cauldron. So we now have this really wonderful team. Yes. And we've done about 8 shows. We are feeling really good about how it's formulating, and we're coming into, you know, our own stride. As you know, when you have, just like you have us as guests, there's a sort of a back and forth that you start learning how to do. And Deb and I are really hitting our stride on that. I'm really happy and proud about that. So most of it is I do readings over the phone. I do Zoom. So here in the area I'm in, Arkansas, we're in an area that's a little more open to this kind of thing. But as far as actual stores and places you could put your shingle out, I wouldn't do it here.
definitely understand that, considering we're in Western North Carolina in the heart of the Bible Belt.
Yes, there you go. Yeah. So, you know, it it's one of those things where we have Eureka Springs, which is I'm not born in California, but I was raised most of my life there. I go, it's Sausalito plus Guerneville. So you have the artsy with the hippie, and that's where you can go to get stones and things. And there are, certain, open doors there. And then we have Fayetteville, which is where Northwest University is at. So it's a big college town. And we actually have a metaphysical store called the Four of Wands that's there. And so there is the culture. They just happen to be about 45 minutes away from where I live. And so it's not like I can just get in the car and go 15, 20 minutes and get into town. So it's a little bit interesting. I still stay remote. And as it turns out, I'm here specifically because my daughter lives here, and when my granddaughter was born, I kind of visited, and she's at an age where I feel she needs, now an Italian grandmother is Nona, so she needs her Nona here, and she is very, she's very spiritual, and she really sees things that I need to be here to her on, so that was my focus, to be with my biological family. I have wonderful stepchildren in California and family there. But this is where I was called to be. Found out, though, that there are major ley lines here. And a lot of the Arkansas crystals that generate the energy are here. So I figured I was called here for more than family, but that was the carrot before the horse.
Very nice, very nice. That actually, and that's fantastic that you're spending time with your granddaughter that way as well. It kind of goes along with the discussion Reverend James and I hosted last week here on the show about, preserving folk traditions and folk history. A lot of families have that disconnect, generationally, and so much is lost by the time, the kids go, oh, crap, I didn't take the time to learn this when I had the opportunity, and the moments have passed. So that's my heart did what went when you brought that up. That's just wonderful. Since you are kind of new to some of our listeners here, I do know, between Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday, it's Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour, Mystics, Mages, Magical Places, The Witch, The Priestess, and The Cauldron. We kind of have this block of shows. But, not everybody tunes in to each show. Could you give us a little bit of a background on, your history? What brought you to the magical realm, Miss Elvira?
Oh, well, let's see. Once upon a time, long time ago, I was married to my first husband, and now I have had three, so I'm going to own that. But when we divorced, I was really devastated and, just horribly upset. And there was a place, and in Southern California, which is where I grew up, they have, and I know they do in a lot of places, they have motels where they are like a U shape, and then the center is where the main person that works the desk will be, as well as the living facility. Well, one particular location near where I was living with my family turned it into a educational environment, and it was called Every Woman's Village, and
nice.
It showcased all kinds of different things, cooking and sewing and antiquing and all these things. Well, I had always looked at their schedules, but because I was so busy in school and all that, I kind of put it aside. But with this break in my life, I was looking, and there was this one class called Basic Tarot Reading. So I went, oh, my gosh. And then, of course, because my father's side of the family was Italian, and Sicilian being definitely how they describe themselves, the two sisters, my aunts, I had heard at one time, being good Catholics, but in whispered form, said that they read playing cards. So I go, it's in my blood. You know, that's very dramatic. So that's what I did. I took this class, and this woman was incredible, and she belonged to an organization that was another offshoot of, like, the Golden Dawn and you know, that kind of belief system, but she basically focused on the tarot. So she had three versions, beginning, middle, and advanced. So, and at that time, this is dating me, I recorded it on cassette. So I would go home and I'd listen to it before I go to sleep. And of course, because we're in Southern California, I'd go to the beach. And of course, that would go on my head with headsets, and I'd be listening to that while I'm baking in the sun. And so, you know, I kind of really got excited about it to the point where she saw me every day, you know, every week with my headset on. She said, you're the only student I've ever had that is listening to the week before when I come in on headset. And I said, well, okay, thank you. And, I mean, I followed her when she left there and did some other things. She basically read for the stars, the movie stars. She read for different people that are famous that had gone to her. And I didn't know this, but, you know, getting to know her, going to these different classes, and getting readings from her. So at one, you know, that followed through, and then obviously I took a break and went into, you know, different avenues, found another husband, played private eye for a while, did all kinds of stuff. Then we found out I was pregnant, so we were deciding not to have the child in Southern Cal, so we went to Northern California. And after my daughter was born, because I'd always been active, I was bored. I love my daughter. I love being a mother, but I was like, I need to do something. We started a metaphysical store called Firewind in Healdsburg, nice. California. And we sold items. I did my readings. I started taking, you know, pagan and witchcraft classes and, you know, workshops and, you know, programs that went for months at a time. And, you know, I just kept following it. We had it for 5 years. And we did, you know, Ren fairs and all kinds of, we didn't do Pentheocon, but we did Ancient Ways and all these different fairs. And I really found myself fitting in and feeling this was home. And so, you know, through the situation that we eventually divorced, and I had to close the store because being a single parent of a kindergartner, there was no time. So I kind of changed professions and did corporate America, and then finally at some point there was, you know, another shift in my life, at which point I found Lucky Mojo, because one of my very dear circle sisters said, you have to come and see this place, it's great. So we wound up going there, and I met Miss Cat, and she was in the middle of a kerfluffle where somebody was not there, and she was looking for somebody, and she needed a personal assistant. And I looked at her and I go, I'll interview. And then when two of us met, and I realized that she also, you know, our conversation about reading and all of that, she has a statue in her down in the office in the main area, and it's a gypsy. And it's got dark hair and her gypsy bandana on and everything. And she took a look at me because I have dark hair. And even though I have gray, I have colored it purple, blue purple. So it only shows in certain light. And she looked at me and she looked at the statue and she looked at me and she looked at the statue. And at that point, I think that was her sign. She decided to hire me, and then I came on in terms of that and then did readings, and the rest is history.
That's fantastic. You know, Miss Kat has actually brought so many of us together in one way, shape, or form. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I could listen to her stories for hours and never be bored. The life that she's led. But you know, that's wonderful. And like Balkan Diviner mentioned about, you know, spirituality and self-improvement going hand in hand all the time. You know, it's funny how when these situations hit us and we don't necessarily have the tools available in our arsenal, what have you, at the time, the magic finds us. The universe moves, mm-hmm. and, you know, mm-hmm. we're brought to where we're supposed to be. So cool. So cool. And, you know, this is, I have to say, I couldn't think of a better duo for the witch, the priestess, and the cauldron, the rebirth of the witch, the priestess, and the cauldron. I've had the opportunity to listen in on the shows, and it really is a fantastic time to, you know, to really just, oh, trio, yes. The cauldron is important too. Yes, Reverend James. I'm being corrected via chat.
Oh, yes.
Even though he's here on the line.
Well, it's easier than interrupting you while you're talking.
Oh, okay. But, well, you know, what are some of the topics and things? Like, what are the things that you discuss on the Witch, the Priest, and the Cauldron? I'll let either one of you jump in and
Deb,
take
go
that.
For it. I've been babbling. I'm going to send it to you.
Well, I'm definitely on a big learning curve. As I do the show here, and I just find it all very exciting. I'm really grateful to be partnered with Elvira and Nagashila. And a big thank you to Kat for putting us together. Me and Elvira did talk quite a bit before we did the first show, which was, it was really good, because I kind of see us as taking topics about what we do as witches, professional witches, and discussing the different aspects like surrounding that topic and also the different practices, rituals, and things along that line. And then I think what we're doing is we hope to like explore these topics in a real holistic way, kind of examining like the how-to or the informational side along with the body, mind, and spirit aspects of the craft.
That's awesome.
And so like for the first things, for the first month, which was July, our theme was power and empowerment. And the first show we talked about personal power and empowerment. And I thought that was a really good place to start because it was all about how just understanding our own personal power and recognizing if we're giving away our power and just things, you know, along the way of like setting limits and just being able to develop your, you know, authentic self in a very, you know, strong way. I think when you do that, you have like a really strong foundation then for your practice. And when you start, you know, practicing, you know, divination and spellcraft and things like that for clients and stuff like that, I think that, you know, everything that you do is going to be that much better. And so that's kind of was our jumping off point. And so I thought that was a good start there. Then we talked about other forms of power, like aspecting. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, honestly, I was just going to mention, in this day and age here in 2023, so mm-hmm. many people are feeling powerless and mm-hmm. really, in a lot of cases, have, as you said, given away their power or allowed it to be filtered mm-hmm. away. in different ways, shapes, and forms, that it, you know, that's an awesome fan and place to start in building not just the show, but, you know, to give these how-tos and these call-outs to this, it definitely enriches the landscape. So I'm just going to say, folks, if you haven't listened to those shows, jump back in. The Witch, the Priest, and the Cauldron, it's off and running. But, you know, so you do, it's very much a teaching and discussion sort of a feeling that I've got from listening to the shows. It's very, you do go very in depth in some places, in some cases, that in ways that is very intriguing. Definitely some thought provoking shows that you've both put out so far, I have to say. Phyllis Margaret Gabor says, every time I listen, I learn something.
Thank you.
Yeah,
I think taking like the usual, I would think of like the usual witchcraft and Wiccan paganism topics and then kind of going into like a deeper level about what those are about, I think is pretty much has been like our goal, just a deeper dive into how we work with certain aspects in the witching life and how those things affect us in our day-to-day journey. Yeah, and so usually we start out just kind of describing, defining the topic, real basically just kind of going into that to, you know, lay the foundation, and then we start exploring, like, you know, what it means and how we work with that in our lives, in our, you know, professional lives and in our private lives. Yeah.
Well, you know, really, the 2.0 version of The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, it really, the original show laid a wonderful groundwork, and I know personally, from some folks that I've talked to, you know, that they really gleaned a lot of wonderful information from the original show, and really where the both of you picked up from and have already started to take it. As a sister show, I'm very excited to watch where it goes and how it continues to grow. The dynamic is fantastic. You know, the topics are wonderful, and there's a lot of things that, you know, from two practitioners, longtime practitioners, you know, it definitely is a breath of fresh air in the social media world that we live in with, you know, anybody that spouts off an opinion, all of a sudden it's a law or a rule or, what I hesitate to say it, but, you know, a grandmother tradition. But actually, we have a question for you in the chat too, for the both of you. What type of witches are Ms. Elvira and Deborah?
Well, let's see.
My brain flashed back to like Wizard of Oz. Are you a good witch or a bad witch? But that's not what he meant.
Well, the funny part is the woman that plays the Wicked Witch of the West, her name actually was Elvira, the character.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah.
Not that I take that name as being. Yeah, well, I mean, that's my grandmother, my father's mother's name. So it was a hard name to live with. And as most of us know, when we get started, we go through changes. And so we change our names. And my poor mother, she had to put up with, I think, probably about four different personal first name changes that I went through as to who I was and what I was. And then, of course, I came back to Elvira, but as has been pointed out, I changed the I to a Y because there was a shift in the energy ancestrally, and I needed to honor that shift because of where we were going. So I would probably tell you I used to think of myself as a feminist, a dionic, and then I realized that was a little off base and I needed to have the balance of the masculine as well as the feminine in terms of that. And then I kind of explored Stregaria, but that didn't work with me. So I guess you'd probably give me an eclectic. I am basically eclectic. So there you go.
Elvira, I just want you to know that I have a T-shirt that says Elvira, Mistress of the Dark. It's one of my favorite T-shirts. I don't think I ever told you that I have one of those, but I love that name. I think that that's a great name.
I think I would say when
I first kind of got introduced to witchcraft, I was in nursing school, and I met a few other people that were very much into the Dianic witchcraft, and that was like back in the mid-80s. And from there, I did a couple little things with a group back then, but then I was pretty much solitary. And I'm not necessarily Dianic or anything like that. I am pretty much eclectic. I know in the 90s, in early 2000s, I worked at another local shop called the House of Magic, and I communed with a lot of different witches over that period of time. And then when in the early 2000s, we kind of formed Elvira, called it a grassroots when I told her about this, but we kind of formed our own coven when I started my shop. And we had about, we didn't have 13 people, but we had, I think, 10 or 11 people. And that lasted for a few years. And I had a lot of good experiences with them. Because we had been, well, me and my sister, who's actually my bio sister, have done a lot of our witching things together. And back
very
then,
nice.
We really wanted to learn more about ritual, how to do ritual. And so that's when we started kind of reaching out to other witches. And we did join this other coven for a minute. I think it was Gardnerian. But they really didn't show us very much about ritual. And so then we decided to start our own. And we kind of, a lot of my ritual training is very much self-taught. We just, from networking with others that were doing similar practices, we started kind of putting our own stuff together, and we called ourselves the 13 Moons Coven. And we used to be listed on Witchbox when Witchbox was the thing to go to when you were trying to find other witches. And and so in recent years I've been more, I know I'm an older woman now, so I've been considered a crone or an elder for quite a long time, but I'm very eclectic. very eclectic. And there's so many different aspects of witchcraft that I truly love. I'll tell you, one of the first things that kind of attracted me was the whole goddess aspect, because I was raised Catholic, and just wanting to explore that side of deity and connecting with something that was like me really drew me. And and also the fact that a lot of, I would say, Wiccan or other pagan witchcraft groups do hold older women in high esteem. And so that, I kind of like the thought of that. And so, so there were so many different reasons I was drawn to it. I know there was a lot of magical things in my family's background, like both getting back to Ouija boards, both of my grandmothers had Ouija boards and would do spirit communication. And so I was always drawn to that element of magical craft, you know, working mm-hmm. with spirits. I've always been, that's like a primary love, I think.
Yeah.
Very nice. You know, there's actually another interesting question for the both of you in our chat. Because one of the things that we all have in common, we all are members of AIR, you know, the Association of Independent Readers and Root Workers. Have you encountered difficulties attuning the Christian elements of hoodoo with the pagan elements of witchcraft?
do you want to go first, or should
I'll let you go
ahead,
with
Ivana.
That. I'll do the end.
Okay. 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 I'll tell you. The way that I see myself is as, I guess I would call myself like a pan spiritualist, eclectic witch, because I actually love all different aspects of having to do with spirit and God and goddess and all that. And so I find I can very easily flip back and forth because I find all of them intriguing and interesting. And so I really don't have a problem with the, you know, and I have a Catholic background. So I actually love working with saints and angels. And, and so I think that that's something that I, for myself, I feel like I can easily flow into the understanding of that. Because it's like, if I work with a client and they have a certain religious background, I have never had a problem with connecting to that and, you know, and using that form of expression. Because I think it all leads back to the same place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I really do. So that's my take.
Yeah.
How about you, Elvira?
You know, well, that's an interesting, you know, Matthew Fox wrote a book, Many Rivers, One Source, and my upbringing was neither religious in any particular direction, though my father was raised Catholic and my mother Methodist. They wanted us to follow our own kind of structure and explore, and so I did. You know, I had friends who were Jewish, so I would go to their place of worship or, you know, whatever. And so I had a lot of different background. My background from my father was he was a Reikian therapist, and so I had a lot of understanding of things like that. At one time I trained with him. So my background gave me this very open reference point. So when I did finally encounter the hoodoo tradition, having done my own, you know, pagan, Wicca, Striga, witchcraft gathering, I could see the common ground. I mean, there is differences, definitely, you know, and deities are different, and some of the ways you approach are different. But I felt the commonness of all, the one source, and how it worked. So I could actually see, you know, how I felt attuned to the different magical practices that were there, the rituals, the, you know, the different things. And because in itself, it too is a blend of belief systems and traditions, it flowed with me. And, you know, I kind of felt, well, this is, you know, there are these things, and we call it a charm bag, you call it a mojo bag, you know, it's a combination of what you see. So I felt like, well, this is fine and dandy, and I can work with the circumstances and feel comfortable and empowered because I understand their source, and that's probably why I chose to reinvigorate the Witch, the Priestess, and Cauldron with that consciousness to start what we will be going forward into the, you know, once we get through into January, we'll be doing other things. We will be talking about deities and goddesses and, you know, some of the things that we, that had been done before, but again, with that same depth.
See, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. No, that's excellent. You know, I just have a few kind of like rapid fire questions from the chat for you both, and then we'll move on and do our announcements and jump into the second segment of the show. So, having worked with others in a coven setting, do you both prefer working solitary or more of that group, the coven action?
There's like pros and cons of either one. I tend to stay away from anything though that has like any political structure or religious musts. I did, you know, work within a couple of covens along the way, and then when we formed our own coven, we actually wrote out like a whole, you know, little a vision statement or something like that, where we. And it was interesting because I actually loved our coven that we had at that time because it was very dynamic. There were people that were practitioners from different things, you know, different backgrounds. There was, half of them were Wiccans. A couple of them were Santeria. There was... a Catholic in there, and then there was a couple that were just not affiliated with anything and were pretty eclectic. But that I really loved working with that group because we didn't have any kind of like religious rules. We had like kind of like little competency levels that we made up, like for beginners, you know, they would be at level one, but it was loose, but it was defined. And level two would have been like, you know, more into the spell casting and divination. And then level three was more along the lines of teaching. And, but most of the people in the group had been practicing for a long time. And so it was kind of like the inner circle. And what we ended up doing, it was we ended up doing a lot of public ritual. And so when you're doing a public ritual as a coven, you kind of have, you know, your coven is the inner circle, and then you have the community, which is kind of like the outer circle. And what you end up doing is you end up doing a lot of teaching as you're going along in the process of performing ritual. And so I really enjoyed doing that. I still do that. And, mostly with my sister, and then we have a couple of people that are still like from the original coven that will join sometimes. Some years they will, some years they haven't. But so there are like good things about being in a coven or being in a group, but you have to find the group that really works for you. And so
that resonates.
Because I tried a couple of them on and they were, there were things that I liked about them, but things I didn't care for so much. And so then when we started our own, we really kind of talked to everybody that was in it and together formed like what we were. And a lot of what I've done has been solitary though. A lot of the things that I do outside of ritual or, you know, community casting or community spell work or whatever ends up being, you know, solitary. And I do, I really enjoy my solitary too. I mean, I really feel in touch with it, you know, in this autumn season, you know, this is like my favorite time of the year.
Right.
And so just going into nature, yeah, and just being there and connecting with nature spirits and the land and all of that is just, you know, something that I think is much more precious when you're doing it as a solitary person. So, yeah.
Totally understand.
Yeah.
How about
so
you, Miss Elvira?
There's pros and cons.
Well, I started out with groups, not public, but, you know, more structured groups. And then people, you know, a certain time we would meet and all. And it was good. It was good training, but I never felt really, like, connected. And then through the store that I owned, there were these two women that came in and became sisters. And we basically formed our own coven, three of us, and we did that for decades. Even when the woman that moved away, we would drive up to Oregon. I'd put my daughter in the car and grab my other friend, and we'd drive up in the middle of the night to do our Samhain work and all of that. And it lasted for a very long time, and then things started to change. My one circle sister went into wanting to be a nurse, so she had her whole life change around, you know, nursing school. And then the other one had, you know, things going on in her life, and we kept in touch. So the sisterhood itself stayed loosely connected, and we would do, as we found in, you know, the COVID time, we would get on the phone and we would do this whole connection and all. And then eventually it basically dissolved. And subsequently I've been solitaire, and I've enjoyed it because it's putting me a lot more in touch with a lot of elements. Quite frankly, I relied on the other two circle sisters to fill in. So it was kind of like, this is the PhD training of working with spirit, so to speak. And it doesn't mean that I'm opposed to working, you know, again in a coven. It hasn't happened. It hasn't energized. And I know it will be right should it and when it does. So, yeah.
Awesome. Okay, one more personal question and then a couple questions about the Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron, and then we'll jump into our announcements. But this one comes with a little bit of a quick story from the chat. It says, I have a pagan friend from Canada who told me an interesting story. She worked with a coven whose members had a strong affinity to fire. The candles burnt quickly in a very unusual way, to the point that even a skeptic remained mesmerized. Do either of you have an affinity for a particular element?
I'm like a triple fire Aries. I do resonate with fire and air probably more. I try to be balanced though, and incorporate, you know, earth and water, because I really need that, because that being like a triple fire can be intense, where I get very passionate about things, but then I also burn the candle at both ends. And so I have to really think, you know, do a lot of grounding, connection to the earth, and also, you know, a lot of spiritual baths just to, you know, wash away any residue or any, you know, unwanted energy. How about you, Elvira?
Well, considering we are, once again, I am a fire sign, and fire is my element. And then, of course, I've got an air rising. So we got air, which is the chatty Kathy in me. those are my elements. And the funny part is that I don't have earth in my chart. And, you know, there's a philosophy that the reason you don't have an element is because you've mastered that element. Again, trans, you know, personal astrology. But I did find that literally I would have that with all of my relationships. Like, for instance, all but one husband were all Earth. My father was Earth. The corporate bosses I worked with was Earth. So it was kind of interesting how my relationships took on the element of Earth. Of course, then I wound up with stones and anything that you can think of that's rocks that I also use. So, you know, there's that. And, you know, water is probably, I don't consider it the least of my elements. It's more like I use it. I go into the water. I love the ocean, but I happen to love the ocean like Hawaii, and that's probably why I trained with the kahuna in Hawaii, because obviously there was a lot of working with, you know, the water. So, but the fire is definitely the element.
Excellent, excellent. All right, so jumping back to the witch, the priestess, and the cauldron. Some questions that we have from the chat. Will you be taking guests?
We will, after we've been on for at least 6 months, because I feel that at this point, my personal concern is that we get our tempo and our interactions where we're really comfortable. Miss Phoenix and I didn't do that. I think it was more because we were working in certain things where guests didn't fit in specifically as we thought they might, you know, down the road. So what do you think, Deb?
Yeah, well, I think that, that's a good thought about kind of getting our foundation down and our tempo and all that. And I'm on a huge learning curve as we do this. And so, yeah, I would be open to later on, like maybe having guests, because that to me, like that's what art does. And that's like a whole different, different thing. Like where, you know, you have to, be familiar and ask questions and get like into that. That's like a different focus. And so, yeah. I mean, I would be interested in that, in the future.
Awesome. Okay. Couple other quick, just a couple quick questions. Have you done any rituals or spells on the air, or do you plan any?
Oh,
Well, you've talked about spells on the air. So we, you know, in terms of this, you know, bringing that out, we haven't done any real spell work on the air. And I don't know about ritual. I'm sort of 50-50 on it. Go ahead.
I think not this past Hoodoo Heritage Festival, but the one before it, I did a workshop on, it was part of the Crossroads panel, and I kind of talked about the structure and how to do a ritual for Hecate, working with the three-way crossroad. And so one I know is available. Thanks. I know that one is available on Lucky Mojo Forum.
Hoodooworkshops.com.
Yes, thank you. yeah, and I've done, there's like a Facebook show that's a local thing. It's called Witchy Wednesdays, and I know I was on there a number of times, and I believe I did a ritual or went through how to do a ritual for Hecate on there also. I haven't done anything, or we haven't really talked about ritual yet, but I'm sure that we will. talk more
it'd
about
it. It'd be interesting to translate that to the medium of radio, where mm-hmm. with the other options, you know, you have that visual aspect of it. But mm-hmm. as with all things, if mm-hmm. there's a duo on the air that can accomplish this feat, it's Miss Elvira and Miss Deb. And with that,
aww.
Reverend James, I think it's a great time to have our announcements. And then we'll be back with our topic segment.
The LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rework Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Contraman, Sundays 3 to 4:30, Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places with Reverend Art and Reverend James, Mondays 4 to 5:30, The Crystal Silence League Hour with John St. Germain, in syndication, Tuesdays, The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Deborah Voigt, Tuesdays 4 to 5, and The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Phoenix LaFay, in syndication, Thursdays. All time specific, add 3 hours for Eastern, sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com.
Support for this program is provided by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and located online at luckymojo.com. And by the Association of Independent Readers and Rootworkers, AIR, a directory of ethical and authentic conjure practitioners located online at readersandrootworkers.org. And by Hoodoo Psychics, the first psychic line run entirely by Hoodoo practitioners. Receive a reading with a trusted rootworker instantly. Call 1-888-4-HOODOO or visit hoodoopsychics.com. And by the Crystal Silence League, a free online prayer service of the Association of Independent Spiritual Churches located online at crystalsilenceleague.org. Thank you to all of our sponsors. Back to you, Reverend Art.
Thank you, Reverend James. An expert announcing, as always. I kind of goofed him up, I think, a little bit with the music right there at the beginning. It was like, start, stop, start. And I actually always have to make sure that I'm on mute because I kind of sing along to the Genie song as it's playing.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
And you kind of have to do that little boogie in your chair. But
sure.
So moving on to our topic for tonight, you know, we got together to talk about Maven and the turning of the Wheel of the Seasons. Of the Wheel of the Year. And, you know, it's right at this time of the year when really people start to look at, you know, that it's probably the most drastic change in the seasons, mm-hmm. honestly, as far as I'm concerned, you know, and you start hearing about the harvest moon and the autumn equinox and really just kind of the changes that it brings about spiritually, energetically, so on and so forth. So when we talk about the fall equinox and the changing, the turning of the wheel, what are some of the things that you both bring about this time of year? Like, what does this mean to you?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Deb, I'm going to let you go with the beginning of that.
Okay. Well, I kind of go like with the, you know, with the Wheel of the Year. And so there's kind of like a story behind each celebration, you know, kind of starting with the winter solstice, where they say the goddess gives birth to the god, as the child of sunlight. And then from this birth, the world begins to grow warmer and the days grow longer at the winter solstice. And then the next one is Imbolc, and the mother nurses the son, and he grows into power, and then the goddess returns to the world from the underworld at the vernal equinox, and with her power resurrects the land after winter. And then she returns as the maiden of spring. And the god grows into power, manifesting it on earth, and things are starting to grow. And then at Beltane, he reaches young adulthood, and both the goddess and the god come into their prime. And they are young lovers at that time, and they consummate their union, and that is celebrated at Beltane. And then there's a summer solstice, and that's when the god has grown into his role as king of the land, and the goddess manifests as the queen. And the king kind of reaches his peak of power at that time and starts to kind of be challenged by his own shadow. Because then as time goes on, he starts to transform into like the dark part of the year. And so then at Lammas is the first harvest, and defeated god is sacrificed for the good of the people and the community, and that's as the grain harvest. And so at Mabon, well, I call it Mabon. I've heard some people pronounce it Mabon. I kind of equate it with the autumn equinox. And just celebrating like that return of equal light and dark day and night. If I go with a story, though, the story is supposed to be that Mabon marks, or the autumn equinox marks, his journey to the underworld. And the goddess grows older. She misses her king and then follows him to the underworld. And as the goddess withdraws her power, the land begins to turn color and wither. And then at Samhain, the horn god rules the year, and the goddess in her grief opens the gateway between worlds to be with her partner and her husband in the underworld. And then that kind of takes us right back to the winter solstice. And we start again, and the goddess realizes that the essence of the god is within her womb. He battles his diminished shadow and then is victorious and born into the world as the sun once again. And so so that's kind of like the story. There's always a story behind all of the Sabbaths, or major Sabbaths and minor Sabbaths. And so the autumn equinox, or Mabon, occurs around September 21st. So we're just about there. And I always kind of see this this time of year as relating to the balance of dark and light. And the second harvest, I've heard it referred to. And so the things that are like harvested later, like squash and pumpkins and apples. And I also think that that's kind of when we have the beginning of the thinning of the veil, kind of, culminating or going to its peak at Samhain.
Interesting.
And so, so usually, there's a few different ways to celebrate in ritual, but usually I'll do things that involve like giving thanks, getting into balance or preparing for winter. I like to do, I kind of tend to do like more meditative type things in the middle of ritual, where maybe I'll either journey to the underworld or, get in touch with what I most need to keep in balance for the coming winter. And then I usually try to focus my intentions on gratitude and giving thanks for the blessings in my life.
Very nice.
So that's kind of my take on Mabon. How about you, Elvira?
No. Well, it leads me to, you know, okay, I guess I'm going to open up a little Pandora box, but not
you know,
that.
let
You're
me
so
just share really quick. You know, before the show started, Miss Elvira and Deb and Reverend James and myself were having a little bit of a discussion. And it was a very enlightening discussion, actually, and some very interesting history around Mabon. And I will let Miss Elvira tell the story again, but to me, it's an important piece of information that really should be kept in the forefront, kept as one of those pearls of wisdom, if you will, or, you know, something to maintain that a seed of thought to really for people to have a level of discernment in their practices, in their understanding of the craft. And with that, Miss Elvira.
Thank you. when you listen to the rebroadcast tomorrow, for any of those that would like to, of the Witch, the Priestess, the Cauldron, Miss Phoenix and I went into great depth about this, and there was, I don't want to say heated, but an intense discussion about calling it Mabon and making that an ancient tradition called Mabon, because there is a Mabon, there is a real deity named that, and it's a male Welsh god. And of course, there is the story of, you know, the sacrifice, you know, the god that dies, the sacrificial god, and all of the things that Deb was talking about at this time. But what actually transpired was a gentleman by the name of Aidan Kelly wound up with some friends of his that were part of the university and the energy pattern where he was at in Northern California, kind of got into they revisioned and became the new Reformed Orthodox Order of the Golden Cauldron. And in doing that, this was in 1970, he took the Welsh god and he made this whole story and revisioned the actual name for the fall equinox to Mabon. And then Oberon Zell liked it, so he liked the name, and so he published this whole process and discussion and mythology and everything in the magazine called The Green Egg. And it was, you know, based on, you know, appealing to the earth-based published people and the groups out there. And so it became adopted as the name and the story and everything. And I think what Miss Phoenix and I basically were expressing, and what I will reiterate here, is that things grow and change. And it is something that we revision and rework and find different ways to describe things. The difference is that when you try to claim that it is based on a very ancient, going back to, you know, way back into 13 and 12 and 900 years, AD or whatever, that this was practiced with this name and this whole process, is a misrepresentation. And eventually Aidan Kelly did correct that in more later years. It was corrected. So I think that for that process, that piece of history, it's like saying what we have now is this, and it is presenced on a myth that is real in very ancient traditions, but it was re-described and reworked and revisited. And I think if that is let be out there rather than trying to make it the law, the way, the one and only, then I feel that it would be appropriate. But like anything else, people get into their stuff and I think things kind of get out of whack. And so you have this whole little, you know, experience. I have no problem. I did point out that when we were talking before the show, I said, well, I will call it the fall equinox. To me, that is what it represents, not Maboon, in terms of that. And it's because that's what I personally feel connected to, even though I do have Scotch and Irish heritage, and that goes back in, you know, my ancestry. And, of course, I'm sure along with a lot of other things on a spiritual and a more earth-based tradition. But this is what I resonate with. And so it doesn't make the other wrong, except that you need to be a little more precise about the history of how it came about.
that's very interesting.
it is. And it's kind of almost, and what year was that, Miss Elvira?
1970.
You know, if this bit of information and this little insight into the history of Maven is, you know, reflecting back to 1970, when you think about how quickly information is spread in this day and age, you know, it really does call to the practitioners to really vet your sources and not to just assume that because so-and-so has 10,000 followers, 100,000 followers, that, you know, thy word is law. It's a kind of a weird sort of, I don't know, mismatch or mashup that's going on. It's important to call this out, really, in a way that, you know, it is what it is, but really to kind of allow people to make up their minds on how they want to go with it. You know, follow the fall equinox, call it Maven if you want, you know. it really comes down to more the practices, in my estimation, in my belief, of celebrating this turn of the seasons, this turn of the wheel, than it is as much of the name in this instance. Am I getting this right? I'm not as much of a practitioner myself in this vein, so I want to make sure that I'm not adding fuel to the fire.
Well, what you've got is the idea that you know what you're calling, meaning I call it this, but this is something that came from this time frame and was revisioned. And again, you know, paganism and, you know, of course, neo-pagan and paganism is all been a rebirthing of belief systems and practices anyway. So, I mean, some may have an actual lineage that can go back, you know, 2,500 years, if, you know, but I suspect word of mouth, you know, handed down, you know, and I know that we don't get taught the exact words exactly the way they were said 1,000 years ago. It gets modified and changed. So it's going to change anyway. But if you can own the fact that it's been changed and it was something that came about to reinvigorate a situation, I think it's the honesty of that that is important.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm just, there's a part of me that, that's thinking, could you imagine if Doc Murphy jumped in on this conversation with her her anthropology side? I think that's a whole other show for the five of us that we could set up. But, you know, that really was a very eloquent way to put that, Elvira. I kind of got goosebumps listening just there. But the importance can't be, it can't be distilled out of this. I mean, anybody that's ever played that game in elementary school where all the kids line up and you tell somebody something at the one end and then repeat it down the line. That's what it was called. I couldn't remember and I didn't want to just make something up, but you know, it changes by the time it reaches its destination. I've never once seen it actually be exactly the same from one end to the other. And it's important to keep this in mind while folks are, you know, finding their path, finding their practices, making decisions on the coven that they would like to join or whether they want to be a solo practitioner or, you know, pantheistic, eclectic, whatever really their calling is.
Right.
Couldn't have put a more important point out there into the universe tonight, I think. So thank you, Deb and Elvira, for bringing that to the table.
You're welcome.
I'm very curious, though, because I know Deb talked a little bit about some of the practices that she does around this time of year. How about you, Miss Elvira? What are some of the things that you use to recognize the fall equinox and, you know, the second harvest, if you will?
Well, you know, I'm not a crafty person, though I like crafting and things, but I've always liked to do, you know, and I know corn dollies are usually done at the first harvest, but I try to find that. If I haven't done it by then, I do one. So it, you know, it's kind of and I give the old one that I've held on to, I basically, and for the most part, I take it and find a place that doesn't mean I'm in the middle of our, you know, like here I have a lot of raw land that we have people that have houses on. I try to go to a place where it's less likely that when I throw this out, they're going to find animals coming to their backyard. But I also like to do basically a wreath, and usually vines, just a vine wreath. And I used to do one, and I'd put it on my door outside, and of course, you get a Christmas wreath, I'd still put it over it, you know, it's kind of like that would be what I would do. And, you know, doing ritual in my own home, I like to basically kind of get everything kind of quiet and mellow and just do a inner meditation. And interesting that drew Deb and I closer together is we both, one of our major goddesses, patroness goddess, is Kate. And I will basically go to her temple because part of the practice that the small coven that I had, we created a temple on the inner plains, and so we would go there and, you know, do work or anything. And that's where I would go to sit and be there and get any wisdom that I need that is harvested throughout, you know, my year. And that is part of what I look for, either through conversation with Hecate or insights that come in and intuition, things of that nature. So it's this is because it's solitaire, so it's not that I sometimes cast a circle, but I figure, you know, pretty much I do it in my ritual space, my studio where I do my work, and that's got a lot of protection and wards, so I, you know, just reinstitute those and go in. And that's, you know, I don't necessarily go out and you know, make wine or any of that. That is part of the harvest tradition. And that's, you know, kind of what I do. And I, you know, I work with what is the balance, you know, the actual experience of being in balance, because technically balance for that one moment is no movement because it's balanced. And then we start to move again. So it's that moment of quietness that happens. And, you know, finding that, especially I do it at the late night, because then activity is pretty quiet and nobody's running around and, you know, all kinds of stuff. So that's pretty much what I do.
Very nice. I actually have a question in the chat. Which nature spirits or spirits in general do you connect with during this period of time around the fall's equinox?
Okay, well, let me put it to you this way. The squirrel is probably the one that I connect with. I'm sure that I'm more squirrely and, you know, nature than most people. But it's funny. There have been packs of squirrels, literally 3 and 4 of them, that have made my home, my area outside. And I connect with them for a couple of reasons. But they've been very active since I've been here. And so for me, the squirrel is about gathering and, I don't want to say squirreling away, but, you know, the idea of bringing into yourself that process, the things that you need for the winter, not because it's fearful, but because it's something that you need to have for that time when you are moving through what is the darkness or the darker time, where it will bring the, I almost want to say a light, you know, it's instead of a nut that I would be eating, it's a light that allows me to come forward and, you know, integrate the things that are gathered and bring it together. So that's the animal I tend to work with at this time.
How about you, Deb? Is there any particular for you?
Yeah, there's several, but I know that I really connect with trees a lot, and I'm fortunate enough to be able to go into the forest quite a bit, and I think my favorite tree is actually the maple. And the maple is, the fall colors are starting, and the maples are always the first to go.
Right.
And, and I'll, I will sit and meditate, in the trees. And a lot of times, you know, especially when it's kind of at dusk, I feel like they're like silent sentinels, like standing guard and guarding the earth. And I'll just, you know, go into meditation and connect, you know, with the tree. And that's probably one of my favorite things to do. You know, I'll look for paths in the woods that, I like finding paths that lead to nowhere, because that's usually the sign of a fairy portal. And if I find
nice.
Something like that, I'll sit and I'll meditate there and see if I can connect. Those are probably my favorites to connect with.
Excellent. And do either of you have any personal superstitions during this period of time?
It's interesting.
I don't think I do.
It's not, I just, you know, you asked that and I literally came up with no, not at this point that I can think of.
I don't think I have a superstition related to this time of season. Yeah, I know I really like the apple harvest, and I think that apples are like the perfect offering on your altar around this time of year, you know, going from the equinox to Samhain. Yeah, there's a little special place out there quick. I like going to, you know, I do love being with trees, and there's this large abandoned apple orchard. It's out in the middle of the Northwood Forest, and it must have belonged to someone many, many years ago, but it's now it's just public land, forest land, and it probably has like 100 ancient-looking apple trees there, and everybody that's kind of around, local around that area will go there and just pick, you know, buckets of apples. And so, yeah.
That sounds amazing, honestly.
I know if superstition-wise, sometimes I will put apples out so that if there's any wandering spirits of the dead, that they'll, you know, have sustenance from the apple.
You know, that actually kind of goes to answer the next question that we had is, do you harvest fruits and vegetables and use them in a magical way? And if you have a personal favorite, Deb pretty much knocked that one right down the line.
Yes, she did.
I know for myself, this time of year, my mind starts to turn a lot to like wild harvesting of herbs and other kind of plant materials. That's a lot of the stuff that we actually use in our practice. We do try to do just that and harvest as much of it as we can. We try to grow as much of it as we can. Hopefully next year we'll actually be able to have a garden that completely that we can utilize for magical and mundane purposes. How about you, Miss Elvira? Are there any fruits, vegetables, anything like herbs that you particularly harvest to use in magic around this time of year?
Well, you know, it's kind of funny because when I was back in California, the mobile home park that I lived in and the mobile home plot, you know, I owned the mobile but not the land, had apples on it. And one of them they had, it was Granny Smith and then two Gravenstein. And Gravenstein apples are really these small, really sweet apples, but they're grown only in Sonoma County in that area. And it was a hybrid from Luther Burbank, and there's all this history. Well, that would be my go-to. I would bring that out, and I would harvest them, and then I would, you know, put them in a basket on my porch, and you know, obviously I would give them to neighbors and things that were good, and I had a friend who had horses, and so I would gather them up for that. So it was more of that here. Basically, I have a lot of trees with nuts on them, so you know why my squirrels like them. So it's more of that and, you know, gathering the nuts and stuff of that nature and utilizing them as, you know, amulets down the road, you know, holding on to them and doing that. Obviously, my daughter has a beautiful garden, and they plant, you know, their jalapenos and all this stuff, and they gather them, and, you know, they've got all the different things. I am not into the gardening anymore. That's pretty much where I go, is whatever I can find, I gather, and there, but I don't plant and gather, so that's pretty much it.
Very
nice.
You know,
very nice.
I like what I usually find happens most years is that from putting our we carve pumpkins and stuff around Samhain, and and display them outside with candles in them and stuff like that. And usually they'll be the next year they'll be like some seeds will have dropped into the ground and we'll have like this accidental pumpkin pop up in the garden. And I always consider that really lucky.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I love that term, accidental pumpkin.
Yes.
It's like, oops, there's a pumpkin.
Yeah.
I know.
Yep.
Well, I want Nobody you to know here, they've already started, are decorating for Halloween, and I'm driving along different streets, and I'm seeing, you know, the ghosts and the little graveyards that they put out, and everybody starts getting all into it, and it's kind of funny because... Mm-hmm. In California, I mean, they kind of wait a little bit longer till, you know, like another couple of weeks. Once October gets in, then they start going. But here, it's like, forget it. As soon as you start seeing the colors turn, they're putting their stuff out.
Yeah. Yep. That's how it is around here, too.
So.
You know, I was actually just thinking of a little bit about what you had said a little earlier to Deb, is that, you know, around the time of the fall equinox is kind of the start of the thinning of the veil. You know, that's one thing that I personally do around this time of the year. You know, while, you know, I work more towards connecting with my ancestors. I work with my ancestors as often as I possibly can, make offerings and such as regularly as humanly possible. But that's one thing I have noticed in around this time of the year about how more intense those connections really, really are. And I really think a lot of it has to do with the grounding of this period. You know, you're taking stock of your successes for, you know, over the previous year. You're letting go of those things that didn't serve you over the past year and you know, letting them go to wherever it is they go. And, you know, it's a very poignant, I would say, turn of that wheel. It also, and I know both of you also do readings and Reverend James as well. Do you notice, as I have, like that your connections become that much more vivid at this time? You know, it's already kind of picked up, now for me, leading up to Samhain. And that actual, you know, the spirit world in the veil at its thinnest.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you one thing. I've been having some really crazy dreams lately.
And oh, those good. Have been, like, I thought I was the only vivid. One. I swear. Wow.
Yes. Yes. And that's just like in the last four or five nights, just really vivid. And just a couple of times they were a little startling, like you know, where I woke up from the dream. And I'm like, oh, I'll go back to sleep.
Yeah.
So I think that is the veil is thinning. I think we're starting to hear some knocking.
Definitely. And you know what you were asking about, you know, readings and you know that yes, there are things that are coming from a source. I mean, we know about what the tarot cards read or what you know the divination tools that we're using, but it's like they are like as soon as you get a card down, I'm saying what I'm saying and. Person, you can hear them kind of go, you know, because it's like it hits whatever reality they're trying to find out about right in the, you know, thing. So, yes, there is a definite feel of that veil thinning.
Yeah.
You know, we're
absolutely.
We're coming up, we're almost to time for tonight, and I wanted to ask for the listeners and for everybody that's in the chat as well, what are some things that you, some information or some pearls of wisdom, some gems that you would impart to anybody that's kind of just finding their path, you know, to be able to kind of really, I'm just going to say it the way it came to my mind, grab the season by the balls and really kind of to utilize the energies and the vibrations and everything that's going on around them to further their practice and to kind of grow along their path.
Mm-hmm. Well,
oh, there's so many things.
I'll let you start. I'm only going to have about a minute anyway, give or take, so I don't worry about it.
that's an interesting question because I am starting a discussion group at our local shop, and our first topic is going to be the witch's path, and so we're going to be talking about how people got started on their path, where they are now and where they would like to go next in their journey. And I think that for anybody just starting out, I think it's really important just to, just kind of try on a bunch of different aspects or different flavors and see what resonates with you the most. I think that, you know, if you're able to connect with a couple of different groups or covens, I would do that. If you don't have that or you're not seeking that and you're more solitary, then I would just, do some research and just see, like, what calls to you the most and then just put it into practice. And you'll probably be amazed at what... what happens, especially around this time of year. You know, like you were saying before, this is autumn is a natural time of reflection. And I think that it's a wonderful time to do divinations and to just, you know, tap into that whole collective stream of spirit that is just permeating everything now. Yeah. Yeah, that's
one of
what
the,
I would have to say.
That in Ireland and up in that in the Welsh area, that at this time they would visit the graves and the cairns of the female ancestors and put offerings on their grave or offerings on the cairns, and this was a way for them to start that connection with the spirit time and the goddess. And also because we're coming into Samhain, it's a way to be of giving good things and honoring those energy patterns to get good connections.
I love that.
That's what I know I'm at the end of the time frame. I'm like, that's quick. That's easy. I got it.
We're not quite that close, but.
I have no idea because I don't have the chat, so I don't know where we are with anything. So I'm just looking at it going, okay, I'm assuming we're coming close. It's getting dark outside.
we have roughly about 13 minutes left.
Oh, boy. God, that makes it a lot easier. Or goddess, that makes it a lot easier.
That's lovely, though, Elvira. I really like that. So that's a Celtic tradition?
It's Celtic. It's from the Ireland and the Welsh area of the British Isles. So, you know, up there in the other regions. And, of course, it's, you know, giving blackberry and apple cider to, you know, you can pour it on the ground, you can pour it on the cairns or the graves. It's a way of, you know, an offering being given, and that's the particular ones that were more popular because of, you know, what the was harvested and what they made at that time. So, yeah.
I like that.
And, you know, the idea of going every, okay, when you look for somebody and you look for traditions, and you try on things, you know how we always say protect yourself. It's not about being in fear. It just means stay grounded. You know, the idea of someone, you know, running into something and being all distraught and going, help me, help me, help me. They're not in the best state of mind and emotion and spirit. So always go with groundedness into your discovery areas and explorations. I know, you know, even just literally grounding and centering and then looking at the information or, you know, going to a class or a gathering at the local store that is around you, you'll get a better feel.
That's another very important point, though, as well is, you know, I know in several other shows that we've done on mystics, mages, and magical places, we've talked about, you know, the protection and things of that nature. But like Miss Elvira says, you know, that's not, that doesn't mean live in fear of exploration. You know, it go forth, you know, learn, experience, but do so from a point of your eyes wide open, you know, take the time to really, to do some research on your research, for lack of a better way to put it. You know, we live in an information age. There's so much that can be found. I will say any topic I generally throw at him, Reverend James can find a plethora of stuff. He bombards me with links and information on just about anything that I ever ask about. So I know that the stuff is out there, folks. It's just a matter of taking that time to find it. And if something resonates with you, you know, definitely at first take it with a grain of salt. Work with it, see if it is that true, it hits that true resonance with you.
And if you, you know, if it's,
go ahead.
I was going to say if it's, you know, if it's people that you don't know, you can, I would always vet everybody. Just to, you know, either get some solid word of mouth or do some internet research or something where you know that you can go with confidence into the situation, or if it's a meetup or whatever, that you can go in there and feel okay about going in there and trying, you know, trying them on and seeing what they're about. It's important.
Very much so. And, you know, it's really important to, as Reverend Art has said, this is a very high, intense information age. You know, there's books, you know, invest in, you know, reading one of them, seeing what they really say. You know, there's a lot of things that come across as really great, but you get in and you kind of go, this doesn't feel right. And when you feel that it doesn't feel right, honor that feeling, because it's not that the person's bad or evil. It's that your guidance is giving you the key to back off. And then there are times when you'll feel this intense, like, open and like you've just come to the sun, and then that too is your guidance. I mean, I know we look and we want and we need, And those are driving forces to get us into places. But we also, in all of that, it's better to steer from a more, I don't want to say conservative, but a more balanced, grounded way rather than a, you know, I need it, I'm running right to it, I throw myself at the whole thing.
It's best to use discernment and gather your information to, you know, make the wisest choices as you go forward.
You know, and this kind of, this conversation actually does tie in very well with this autumn equinox energies too, because you know you're casting off what hasn't worked for you thus far. That is thereby opening the door to for new things to come in, new opportunities for exploration, new opportunities for growth, and you know, leading up to that new rebirth, that new growth pattern that, you know, you're laying the seeds for now.
Yep, and we're coming into Libra, right? And that is the scales or the power of balance. So that's very fitting.
We have a good question in the chat. Are there things about witchcraft or paganism to avoid as a beginner?
Let me think. I would probably say avoid people that are so charismatic they eclipse their information.
Oh, that's a good one.
That's
a good one.
Personal story is I wound up getting involved with someone who's really charismatic, and he and his girlfriend were teaching the Ho'oponopono, well, actually it was Lomi Lomi Nui. And some friends had said, oh, this is great. They really are good. And we got into it. It was a boot camp. We wound up literally, it was a boot camp, and a friend of mine, we did it. And it was intense, and we did a second one. And then out of the connection, I connected with someone who had trained with the man who trained him, is what he was saying, and he was on, that he was being handed the baton from the kahuna. Well, as it turned out, he wasn't. He had only taken one class. He had actually trained with the second in command, the kahuna's wife, and I connected with her, and she started to laugh, and she told me the whole story, and she said he never gave him permission to do the work. He was just a student. He came in and he did it. I eventually did train with that kahuna, and he was the real thing, and it was, you could tell the difference, but that was one of those where the charisma took over.
That is an excellent point and a very good cautionary tale to follow it up with. You know, these people, there are so many people that, and you'll come across them in Facebook groups, in, well, heck, even in coffee houses, where they're, you know, kind of like sitting on this golden throne that's built on a foundation of quicksand. And it becomes almost a race to see if you can get out before you get pulled down with them. it's something to watch. It really is. I will say, because I don't want to be all doom and gloom on social media aspects of it, you know, I will say there are some really fantastic groups out there that are very well curated, very well monitored, and very much stick to their guidelines and to the group's rules. The it goes back to the information is out there.
Yeah. You just have to, just as, you know, anything like, this group wants to get money, let's do this, let's, you know, pay, you know, the getting involved in something where there's some investment. You need to do your research and you need to go in, talk to other people, talk to different people, even the people that are disgruntled. Why? Because you might find that you disagree with them and this is, you know, your gut tells you to go, but you get a picture of the circumstances, a bigger, better picture.
How about you, Deborah? Is there anything that you can think as a beginner anyone should avoid?
I'm just kind of thinking, I mean, I think that all the things about, you know, just dealing with people is just to be cautious and to, you know, get as much information as you can before you jump into any class or coven or, you know, any other group situation. But the other thing is, I think that a lot of people first starting out think that they have to buy like a lot of expensive tools and athames and huge crystal balls and all that stuff. And really, I mean, those are nice to have later on, but if you don't have the money, don't feel compelled that you need to spend a lot of money to do, to practice witchcraft. It's, some of the best things can be accomplished with really, really simple, inexpensive items. You know, I know that, instead of an athame, you can use your finger to direct energy. You can, you know, see, you know, sense and channel that energy flowing. And, it, you know, having an athame is nice, but I think the first athame I had was actually a letter opener that I found at a secondhand store. And so
mine too.
You can find some very cool stuff. Looking in the thrift shops and rummage sales and stuff like that, that you can repurpose for some pretty neat, things. Yeah.
You know, I think the funniest thing I still kind of look back on and giggle about is a lot of my Reverend James is cutting me off. That's all the time we have for tonight. We hope you've enjoyed your time with us this evening, everybody. Until next time we meet, keep the magic alive. Take us out, Reverend James.
Right. Thank you, Reverend Art. And thank you, Deborah Voigt of BewitchingBee.com and Elvira Love of Elvira.com, E-L-V-Y-R-A, for being our guest this week. We invite you to join us next week when we'll have another outstanding guest. We've come to the end of this episode of Mystics, Mages, and Magical Places, brought to you by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, on the LMC Radio Network. You can find Reverend Art at FolkConjure.com, on the Lucky Mojo Forum at forum.luckymojo.com, and readersandrootworkers.com, and on Hoodoo Psychics, Thursdays and Fridays from 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and Saturdays and Sundays from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm your announcer, Reverend James, joining you from FolkConjure.com in North Carolina. Mystics and Mages and Magical Places can be heard every week live on Blog Talk Radio at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and the shows are available in archive via mysticsmages.com/radio show and on the Lucky Mojo Forum. For all of us at Mystics and Mages, I'd like to thank you for being here. Be sure to follow at Mystics Mages and Magical Places on Facebook and at Mystics Mages Magical Places on Instagram for updates and news. We'll be back next week at the same time. Come sit a spell. Wink, wink. Relax and enjoy the show. We've only just begun. Thanks, everybody. Good night.
Don't miss the replay of the Maybon episode of The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron tomorrow evening on the Lucky Mojo Radio Network. Real quick, most of my early witchy materials came from church rummage sales. I still think that's funny. I still got it in, even though we're at the end of the show. Blessings, everybody.
Blessings. Thank you.
Blessed be. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.